And now we are joined in the studio by our guest today on the Over the Fence show, Rachel Ralph, who is the founder of Hope Rising Farm. Arthur and Rachel.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, thank you.
And where'd you come from today?
Just driven out from Narawahia via the roadworks.
Yes. And what's the name of the road again?
So we're up to Purua Road.
Purua Road, right.
Would you like me to spell that for you?
T, yeah, I remember going up it, and I keep forgetting the name, but I really don't remember it started with a T, but yes.
Yeah, it's T-E-P-U-R-O-A.
Yeah, all right. Not too far from here. What, take you half an hour, three quarters of an hour, something like that?
Yeah, about 35, yeah. With a coffee stop.
Oh, well, that's it's good. Yeah. Pretty close to Raglan. You come here often, or?
No, I haven't been out to Raglan for probably about 6 months.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah. And I guess tell us a little bit about yourself first, Rachel.
Okay, so I grew up just west of Dinsdale. So I grew up on a farm out there, a little beef farm, Charolais cattle we had.
Nice.
And my parents used to built and owned what was Westlands Golf Course. So I'm well and truly entrenched. My roots are well and truly entrenched out that way.
Yeah, yep. Okay. All right. And then from there, what did you go to university or do some sort of training or stuff like that? Or just stay on farms, basically?
I went to work on some thoroughbred stud farms. So yep. I left school not having done very well.
Yeah.
I just wanted to go out and ride my horse. And so I ended up going to work on some stud farms. In fact, I think I worked on three.
Right.
And eventually went off overseas. And what I thought was probably going to be a short term turned out to be about 2.5 years.
Right.
And then I ended up in Australia for what I thought was going to be 3 months and ended up to be 22 years.
22 years over the ditch. All right. That, again, was on a stud farm kind of setup or on a horse place? Or
I worked on the outskirts of London, working initially as a nanny did the whole, what we now call the OE, whole travel around the Europe, et cetera, et cetera. And then when I came back to Australia, I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I was in suburban life, and Melbourne's a great city, but I just kind of really wanted to come back. And my parents were well into their 80s, and I just knew it was time to come back. So I came back to New Zealand, which was really amazing.
Yeah,
it was really good.
How long ago would that have been, do you reckon? When you came back to
2004,
we came back. That's quite a while ago.
Dragged my husband.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you got to do that, I suppose, don't you?
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the line, you came up with the concept for the Hope Rising Farm. Now, how did this all come about?
So there was a period in my life when I became very retrospective, and I looked back at different aspects of my life and things that I'd seen that I just didn't like. And one of them was one of them was my time in working in England, and I was working as a nanny, and I had walked outside to take some clothes off the line. Beautiful home, holiday home in Spain, just the most incredible place, lovely people to work with. And while I was taking the clothes off the line, the four-year-old girl that I was looking after ran inside, horrified, to tell her mother that I was outside barefoot. And this Kiwi girl was just absolutely shocked. I thought, well, what are we doing to our kids?
Right.
So that was one thing I remembered later on. And interestingly enough, the same little girl had an older brother who was 6, and he'd never climbed a tree. So we just kind of paid to that. And I started taking them out to different woods, as they call them there. And we started looking for bugs and climbing trees and all those things about doing outdoor stuff. And these two kids just absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And they'd never had an opportunity or never been encouraged to do that. It just was not part of their environment.
Interesting.
So that was the first probably major thing. There were a few other things that had happened kind of along the way that made me think, what could we potentially do to make a difference for, and especially for children that were struggling on the outside of society? So one of them was my husband and I were fostering for, wasn't very long, about 3 years, maybe 4 years, and we had two young boys that came and stayed with us. One was a foster care boy and the other one was a friend. They were both about 10 and 11, The foster boy had seen his mother shot at, attacked with a sword, a lot of violence in the home.
Crikey.
And so when they came out to the farm, the first thing they would do was ask if they could make a smoothie. And I said as long as they put the top on, they could make a smoothie and put in whatever they wanted. Yeah. And then the next thing was pretty much always, can we take the dogs for a walk?
Mm-hmm.
So two young boys, we bought some bikes from the rubbish tip and my husband did them up. And then we took them out for and anywhere in the paddocks as much as we could. Took the dogs, took the ball, winter time, got muddy, splashed the whole bit. And this is what boys, I believe, should be doing.
Too right, playing in the mud. Yep.
Playing in the mud.
Yep.
So that was kind of another key factor. And when the foster, the social worker working with the foster child said, how come you're so good when you come to our place? And his words were, the dogs soothe me. So he would pat them and walk. And so, yeah, that was kind of like, I put that in my little radar thing.
Yeah.
And just trying to remember, trying to combine these things to what could we do to make a difference. And with my farming background, I had we all had ponies in my family. My mother was a very accomplished horsewoman, and so it was just automatic that we would all have horses. And so we did stock work, we did pony club and gymkhanas and all those kinds of things. And as an adult, I realised that there were life skills that I'd learnt along the way. So trying to think about the foster children that were in our care, the love of the outdoors. A lot of them the foster children had never had safe time around animals. So dogs were, or could be, you know, pit bulls that may have been just tied up at the back and not been working dogs. I mean, not being able to be patted.
Yeah.
And so the statistics say that if you see an animal abused, you will probably go on to abuse a person. So that was another thing that we just kind of put into the mix and thought, well, what if we could do that? And, of course, the animals being, the prime animals being the horses.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's kind of how it came about, yeah.
All right. And horses because?
they're unique animals. You could say that about every animal, but they are they're a prey animal, so for us to have a relationship with them, which is based on trust and respect. And if we can do that, we need to understand them because we are predators and they are a prey animal. So if they're under pressure, then they will move away, sometimes in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to understand them. So we will teach our students about the importance of that. So it's all about them managing, as in the students, managing their body language, managing the tone of their voices, managing how they approach. Yeah, so the horses are just kind of unique. They're always looking for leaders, and so how can we teach these kids to be good leaders?
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a huge subject, and I feel like after 10 years, we're only just kind of scratching the outside of it.
All right. And so the seeds were planted by all these experiences you had, and then, I don't know, the block of land where Hope Rising Farm is at the moment, how'd that come about?
Well, that's actually a very long story, but we were part of quite an active church, and we had put the word out to say that we would like to get a block of land, and this is what we would like to do, working with vulnerable children. And so we came across an organisation that said, we've got some land, and we actually rented that for about 9 years, and that gave us a really good opportunity to find out whether what we were, this great vision, this great idea, was going to be great or whether it was going to be a doozy.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be great.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And so it was an interim time, yeah.
Mm.
So we've just moved off that a year ago, and we've moved on to 25 acres. We found some investors, and they've brought around about 25 acres up to Porirua Road.
Yeah.
And so we're doing major structuring. We've renovated buildings. We're putting in fencing. It's been a massive job, and we've probably got another few years of that, I'd say. But, yeah, it's been a great opportunity.
Yeah. And when you say where, who's all? How much of a crew have you got up there doing the mate?
Well, we have 6 part-time staff, very part-time.
Yep.
We have probably, oh gosh, I'm guessing, I think probably around about 15, 16, 17 volunteers that we draw on.
Nice.
Some of them are 16, 17-year-olds, so we're always looking for some men to get involved because there's quite a lot of labour at the moment and heavy labour. Mm. And then we put the word out to local community or to our church community if we have extra special things. We've got 7 people out there today actually helping put in a retaining wall. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that must be for the arena, right? Because yeah, I was talking to a guy when I stopped on there briefly, and yeah, they're building a, is it arena, right?
Yeah. So that's been a massive undertaking. We're about 3.
Looks like it's going to be big.
Yeah. It's great. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
We're probably about 3 months behind schedule with all the water issues and the rain issues. But we are starting our second term in a couple of weeks, and hopefully by third term we're hoping that we'll be up and running. Ironically, it'll be coming out of winter. So, but it's an essential part because a lot of the land is quite hilly, so we need to have that flat space.
Mm-hmm.
And we've set up different obstacles which can be help students leading horses focus. So horses notice if you're not paying attention, and the horse can be engaged with you while you're asking it to do a particular exercise. And if you lose focus and start looking at the scenery around you or just take your eyes off it, they will actually notice that. They notice everything.
Right.
And so it's a really good tool for the kids to focus. So having obstacles, whether it's a bunch of tyres or it could be a traffic cone or a drum, it gives them a focus, and then the horses are much more likely to respond to that and to follow their new leader.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And so how do you get the people like coming to, you know, the people who, or your participants, I suppose you'd say, how do you source them and where from, and what kind of people, you know, what sort of groups and that do you take through and do this with?
Good question. So our wider category is vulnerable. So that is anyone who, mostly children, youth and women at the moment, who are not able to make good life choices, probably because of home experiences, you know, life's experiences.
Mm.
So that's our main category, and that is a big generic term. and there's so many people that come from so many walks of life that actually fit that. And so we do a kind of a case-by-case scenario. So we have people that have come through from referred to by school counsellors. They may have employed a private counsellor. We've had people that have come in from different kind of social services, schools, gateway coordinators from secondary schools. And that's...
Wow,
yeah,
that's a wide net.
It's a very wide net.
Yeah.
It's a very wide net, yeah.
Okay. And what, I guess, you know, okay, they turn up at Hope Rising Farm, and what... How does it kind of work? What's unusual kind of, if there's such a thing, when someone turns up there?
Well, typically our dogs run out to meet them in the car park, and which are actually part of our program. They've kind of evolved a little bit to be part of the program. So we will do an orientation, obviously getting your bearings, health and safety. We have a basic fundamental about how horses work, how they tick, what they can see, what they can't see. So that just kind of helps put an understanding about empathy and helping the students realise that they need to take the focus off their phones. We have a no phone policy.
Nice. Yep.
Which is awesome. And so that starts that engagement process. And while we're doing an orientation, we will try and do that in a smaller space, and we will try and have either two of our donkeys or one of our miniature ponies just loose. And they all often come over and start talking to the kids, and I'll tell you a little story about that and when you ask me. And so... Yeah, what was your question?
the day-to-day thing when people turn up here.
So we typically start our programs with some farm tasks. So we want the kids to be able to come and learn something new about holding a tool, or it could be putting hay over the fence to the horses. It could be moving an electric fence. It could be taking staples out of a fence. It could be weeding. It's just a farm task, which is tactile. They get their hands in the soil, We've done some potting, for instance, some potting up of some cuttings. So we always start that. And a typically, I shouldn't say typically, we need to do that with the younger boys so they can pay attention. So we start with the tasks first.
Literally grounding.
Grounding, yeah. it is. And then we will do a equine session, which could be perhaps 40 minutes, something like that, depending on the age of the students. And when they start going through that process, they often start off quite fearful because they've not been around safe animals, let alone a horse. And once they start to learn how they tick, it actually, like, knowledge is empowering. So then they feel confident to try something new. And we start off with the real fundamentals, the real basics of how to lead a horse, how to be able to steer to the left, to the right, stopping and starting, how the horse follows body language. And then we build on those skills. But we take it all very much individually, so we see how each student is progressing. So it's client-led.
Okay. And what size kind of groups do you generally kind of have? Is it just basically one or two or a handful or at once?
Trick question. So the idea is that we don't have any more than two students per mentor. It makes sure that we've got that one-on-one interaction or one-on-two interaction. And if they have stuff they want to download from life at home or whatever, we've got that opportunity to give them the space to be able to do that, which they wouldn't do in a bigger group. But sometimes we will have two to three what we call buddies, which is our mentors, and they will be on the farm at the same time and they'll be working with a group of two, and then somebody else will be working with a group of two. And then we might come together for a team activity, and then we might disperse again into those separate areas. So, so that's the main thrust of the programs, and there's a template around that which we've just used as a foundation, and we adjust that a little bit for different age groups and for the women that come in.
That sounds like it would be a very unique experience, I'd say, for a lot of the people coming there, right? Like I said, not too many people are there with horses anymore, you know. They have interaction with horses. We can even throw cows or, you know, a number of animals in there, I suppose.
There's a whole shift off to moving off the land, and now we've got more people than ever that aren't getting the connections with horses and with other animals as well. We've got dogs, and we've had people hopping out of the car and they start hyperventilating at the sight of a dog because they're just terrified, you know. And dogs are wagging their tails and they don't understand the body language. So so that's nice to be able to have a bit of a paradigm shift for them, and then they realise that it's actually okay, and before you know it, they're you're having morning tea and the dog's sitting on their knee. So,
All right. We've kind of skipped around a bit here, but anyway, we've gone through those ones. We've gone through the experiences, and so you get sent from a lot of things. And there's your programs, and your arena, that's all up and running, and your services, and you're funded. How are you funded there, generally?
So we charge for our services as much as we can. A lot of them are actually heavily subsidised, just because we want to have people on the farm. And we also have some trusts which have got behind us, which is really awesome. We get some private individuals who've got behind us as well. We're always short on time and resources and staff. So, it would be what we would love to have happen is some organisations to get behind us. We're doing some hard yakka and we love what we do. And we know that we're seeing evidence. We're seeing kids that are actually more attentive at school. We're seeing them stop bullying. And so, you know, we're seeing actually feedback. We're getting results that we anticipate. Every child's different. But that's basically how we're funded. So,
all right, yeah. So you're always looking for staff and always looking for volunteers and
yes,
funders?
Yes, and some muscles.
And some muscle, all right.
Yeah, okay.
And so how long's the term run for, kind of thing? They come out like once a week or something like that, is it for like a couple of months or something like that, usually?
There are programs that geared around the school term,
which are
10 weeks usually. Most of the sessions that we run are around 2 hours. If we've got particularly young children, and I don't think we've had anyone under nine But we may reduce that to an hour and a half or something like that,
okay,
yeah, depending on the concentration span. So
yeah, yeah.
We are now beginning to run a women and a mother and daughter program, so that there may be a variation on time for that. But we're just able to have that flexibility that we can create something that's going to work for them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, okay. All right, and I suppose people getting there, like, do you have to go pick them up sometimes and things like that, or?
We don't really mind how people arrive. We don't have any pickup services, so we've got some social workers that bring some primary school children in from the schools. They pick them up and drop them off.
Oh, well, that's handy.
And they pick them up afterwards. Mm. Yeah, it's great. Yep. And that's typically what happens. It's either caregivers or workers who will pick up the children, mums and dads, sometimes mums or dads.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm. And so what, you got donkeys, you got miniature ponies, you got horses, you got dogs, quite a menagerie you have.
Got two sheep now too.
Sheep as well? All
yep,
right.
Yep. So we've got two friendly sheep, but there are conditions with the sheep because they only like you if you've got some bread to give them. So, we're working on that.
So we've
got five miniature ponies, and they're different breeds, and they've got very different personalities, and that in itself is this fantastic learning tool because not every person is the same, and sometimes we have kids that gravitate towards a pony that won't require much from them, it might be a bit more cruisy, and then we have other animals which are a bit more active and want to go somewhere, and we do find often that the children will actually gravitate towards a certain animal, and if you've got a shy-ish, unconfident child, they will gravitate towards a pony that won't ask much of them, and so we will build on that to a point, hopefully, where we can actually, they'll have the skills to be able to have a pony that can actually require something of them, and they learning to be a leader in that process, and so that might be a skill that they can actually take home with them.
So we
like to kind of keep the challenging aspect. Just that every time they come, we just want to build and build and build and build. So we've had teenage boys that have turned up with gloves on because they didn't want to get their hands dirty.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just like, this is a farm, eh? It's a little bit scary what we've seen.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, sounds like there's that disconnect there. I hear it, a few different things, eh? Is that complete, like you were talking about earlier, the disconnect between the urban and the rural, so you're doing a good job there of bridging that gap. One of the good things you're doing out there.
And it's really interesting. We've never heard anybody say they've missed their mobile phone, because it is very interactive. It's visual. It's very tactile. Cleaning a trough, learning how to move a boar cock, getting the slime off the inside, watching it refresh, and as they're walking away, you can see this, oh, wow, I actually feel good about that sense of accomplishment. It's something very, very small, but hopefully that can be a skill that they can take home with them as well. We had a group of boys which came, I think, about 1.5 years ago, and they piled out of the van. They've all come from gang homes. They've got bruised knuckles from being in fights, etc., etc. And they came through our gate, and I always say to the team, we're going to shake hands with every one of these guys as they walk in. So we'll put your hand out, shake, and they give you these wet fish handshakes, which I don't like personally. And so I say, hey to the guys, oh, we're going to teach you how to shake your hand properly. You look somebody in the eye and you shake a hand. And the next time they hopped off the bus, the second session, and they almost went to the wet fish handshake, and then there was this realization, and then they learnt how to do it properly. And I said, do you feel better about that? And they said, yeah, I do. So life skills.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And if you covered that story that about a miniature pony or something you were going to say earlier, you mentioned something about it.
Yeah, so this was wintertime. We had, I think, 4 or 5 primary school children.
Mm-hmm.
So these are kids that have been picked up by social workers. They've fallen through the cracks, not doing well at school. Something's going on at home, probably. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting in the barn, and we were partway through this orientation, and there was a young boy, I think he was about 9, possibly 10, came in. He's got his hoodie on. He's sitting on the back of his chair with his arms folded. Very clearly he was not wanting to be involved. And we had our miniature ponies wandering around the barn, and this miniature pony wanders over and puts his head pretty much right under the boy's elbow, and the boy jumped. And I said, "It's okay, he's just coming to say hello." So I said, "Why don't you give him a little bit of a scratch on the top of his neck?" And so the pony hangs around, and you can see the drama, if you like, or the trauma from this boy just kind of melt away. And I was wondering how this was going to go, because he was going to be my my student for the day.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how much of the orientation he picked up after that, but he just sat there for a few minutes while Eve was doing our talk. And so the pony hung around with a couple of minutes. And then as soon as we'd finished, I just said to him, "Hey, do you want to take the pony for a walk?" And he said, "Oh, yeah." So we went off, and we got partway up the hill, and my Jack Russell Terrier's gone down a rabbit hole. So that was like a magnet for him. And so he's like, "Oh, can I go and see the..." He wanted to go and see a rabbit. But I said, "You won't see the rabbit, but we can go and see the dog down the hole." So we went up there, and probably within 25 minutes, you know, the hoodie's come off, and he starts to talk. And this is the power of the animals. And by doing something, and especially with the boys, it just opens up a world, because they're doing something and they function better when they're doing something.
Yeah. Well, that must be really rewarding. Yeah.
Oh, it totally is.
So if you just joined us, we're talking to Rachel Ralph from Hope Rising Farms. Is there anything that I haven't got to, Rachel, that you wanted to talk about?
So we became a charitable trust in charitable trust in 2013, which was quite a milestone, because for the 3 years after that we'd just been processing it all. When is this going to work? And our accountant had said you should become a charitable trust. It was quite significant. So that's 10 years ago, and we kept a reasonably low profile before that because there were only a few staff, mainly me. So we didn't want to get inundated. So. Can I tell you some stories? So we had a young girl, 9-year-old girl, who came out through a friend of a friend of a friend, and she had been involved in a very traumatic situation at home, and her whole world had just completely shut down. Mum and dad had separated. She was having nightmares at night, completely dropped out of school, just looking really, really not good situation, and nothing that they had done, the mums and dads had done, could help this girl. And so we thought, well, perhaps we'll give this a go. And for the first couple of weeks, we literally couldn't get her out of the car. And we brought our ponies down, and everybody gravitates towards the ponies. The ponies didn't work. And eventually I said to one of our staff, I said, "I wonder if I could bring my dog Fidget in." So he's three-quarter Jack Russell, one-quarter Foxy. Got to have the dog. And so she eventually came out, and I said to her, because she didn't want to talk anymore, and I said to her, "You know, if you said to him, 'Fidget, sit,' he might sit." Because I'm thinking she doesn't want to talk to people, but she might talk to a dog. Yeah. So eventually she did, and he sat, much to her shock. And we kind of progressed from Fidget sit to Fidget stay to Fidget come, up, down, a whole bunch of commands that he knew. And so she started to get her confidence back. And eventually we started doing things like asking Fidget to jump through a hoop and you know, retrieve the ball and all sorts of tricks. And she became quite articulate at giving him commands. And then it was a natural progression to start talking to people again. So we worked with her for quite a while. And in the end, she ended up taking miniature ponies, you know, through our farm, over the ditches, through the trees, all this kind of thing. And when, after, I think we had her for may have been 3 terms, the mum and dad drove in, and the mum said to me, she said, "I just can't shut her up." And I said, "Well, that's great. We've done our job now."
Great story.
It's a great story.
It is a great story.
And that's what keeps us buzzing. And as I say, we've got so much flexibility. If a pony's not going to be part of what ticks their boxes, then perhaps we can try a dog.
Well, maybe a sheep now.
Your sheep. I don't know about the sheep. I'm not a sheep fan, but...
I'm not big on sheep, but they're nice to look at and pretty gentle animals, I suppose, aren't they?
They move too fast.
And is there any plans, like, are you building your arena? That's the biggest thing at the moment. But once that's all up, any sort of future plans for the place yet?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a big vision. So the arena is a very fundamental part of it, because it's going to be our only big flat area. We also in the process of renovating a half-round barn, which will be some kind of light engineering workshop, so that students can come actually learn some real basic stuff. Getting their head under the car, for instance, is so not my thing, but we're getting people that are actually will be enrolled in that, some men mentors. We would love to start something that would be along the similar vein, but doing woodwork. So kids could learn some skills and holding some tools. We would like to start a little native plant nursery, because a lot of these kids have never had vegetable gardens. They've never seen anything grow. And then in 10 weeks, at the right season, we'll be able to plant something and see something come up. So so that's really kind of cool. We've got some offices which we need to fundraise for. Because we're running out of two semi-functional offices at the moment. So we need that, because we need more staff and we need more people. So we need offices. So we've got yards coming, hopefully. So it's a big picture. It's probably a 5-year plan. And we need $25,000 for our sand arena.
All right.
Yep.
Ambitious, I like it.
Absolutely.
Your shed thing's a great idea. Mucking around with wood, cars, I don't know, welding eventually, things like that. You know, lots of skills you can learn.
So we have a male mentor called Mark, and Mark would, because our sessions largely only go for 2 hours, so Mark might take one, perhaps a boy in particular, but it doesn't have to be. That might be for 40 minutes, and he might do some real basic carpentry skills, or learning how to use a weed eater or something like that. And they absolutely love it, and it gets them off their phones. And they actually learn coordination. There's a left brain, right brain thing, which is just really awesome, and it's physical. So we would love to see that grow. We'd love to see that grow.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we better wrap it up, I suppose. We've got another GJ coming in soon. Is there anything else we sort of missed? Or
just quickly, I guess the nature of the kids that continue to come through. Vulnerable is this massive, great, big generic term, as I said. We find that the kids that are coming are often very low on confidence in their own abilities. The phones haven't really helped with that much.
There's a wall of science behind that now, social media.
It's massive. It's absolutely massive. And growing in confidence the way that is probably the biggest thing that we see is being aware of their own body language, their responses, their emotional regulation. And as I say, there's so many stories, but probably if you want to see some stories, jump on our website. There's some pretty cool ones on there.
It's a beautiful website too. It's a well done thing. You got a little brochure too, which I grabbed when I was there. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with Hope Rising Farms then, Rachel?
Probably via the website. I also have a phone number. Can I give that out?
Sure.
I can just find that.
Find that somewhere. Where's that brochure? I think it's on the brochure too.
On the brochure.
There we are.
So that is 021-177-3075.
All right.
Should I repeat that?
Yes.
So it's 021-177-3075. And our
Marie, wasn't it?
Maria. And our website is hoperisingfarm.org.nz.
All right. And you're on Facebook and all those kind of things?
We are. Yep. There's all the information on there.
Yeah, all right. Well, yeah, folks. And, thanks very much for coming in, Rachel. Really appreciate it. Making a trip over here. And sounds like a great program you're doing. Yeah, best of luck with it.
Thank you.
As time goes by, we'll get you back on the show once the arena's done. When's that? Fingers crossed, another couple of months or something like that?
Yeah, let's hope.
Cool. It'd be good to keep in touch then. As things come, as time goes by, and check your progress and that. All right.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having us. It's great.
No worries. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that's Rachel Ranch there from Hope Rising Farms. What's the name of the road again?
Oh, Te Porora Road.
Te Porora Road, which is just off, is it?
Wanaro.
Wanaro. Not too, on this side of the Waipa,
It's only a few minutes from Ngarawahia,
Not far out of the beautiful NGA. So there we are, folks. Rachel Ranch there from Hope Rising Farms. I hope you enjoyed the interview. That'll do it for the show, so thanks for listening.